Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, good morning. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Just call 260-1870. Got on till 10 o'clock. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning, Doug. How are you?
Doing good. How are we doing, Doug? Are we here now, Albert? Okay, Albert, can you try to just call in? And then our experiment is not working. Yeah. Okay, but we're going to have Albert. We're trying to get him zoomed in. You can stay. We'll just stay on. And then we're on till 10 o'clock, and Albert's going to be calling in. We were trying to zoom in. We're doing a new home studio experiment that has failed miserably, but we will get Albert in. But so when Albert gets on, we'll talk about the Pelicans. We'll talk about the Saints. We'll talk about LSU basketball. And I will talk about LSU baseball in the first segment reluctantly because Albert likes to talk about LSU baseball, but not too much until we get to the playoffs and World Series. So, Doug, if you could pick up Albert on the other line. All right, there you go. All right, so there we're on. But Albert, so I didn't watch the Pelicans game, and I was wondering.
All right, real quick, Doug, can I sign off with the computer? Because I'm getting feedback from my end.
Yeah, I'm gonna turn it. Yes, that'll be fine.
All right, I'll sign off.
Or turn off your mute. You can mute it. You can just mute it.
There you go. I don't need to see your mug.
All right. So we try. We'll get it right. Experiment number one. You know, thank goodness I wasn't on Apollo 13, because that would have turned out bad with my use of technology. So thank goodness for that. You watched the Pelicans game last night. You kept an eye on it.
Aaron and I went to eat at Drago's. Her birthday is tomorrow, so we went over to grab some dinner, and actually the game was on for a little bit, and then I came home and we caught the fourth quarter. You know, they played them close. You know, they San Antonio had an answer every time. You know, the Pelicans scored. Lonzo had two wide open threes to tie it, and you know, just missed them both. And then, you know, they were down six with 8 seconds left or something, and they hit a wild shot, and it went in when Lonzo made the last shot to cut it to three. But, you know, they played it pretty well. You know, defensively, they didn't really have an answer for Aldridge. And, you know, they got to figure out a way to play better defense. You know, they're scoring 100 points by the third quarter, but so is the other team.
Yeah, I think they.
I have a theory about that. A buddy of mine is a real, real old school NBA guy. You know, it's like, yeah, they don't use the paint anymore. You know, everybody walks, everybody carries. You know, and he said, you know, they score 100 points in the end of the third quarter. It's like the NBA All-Star game. And I said, you know what? I said, I agree that there's, you know, the rules are a little more slanted towards the offense, because I think all of the leagues think that, you know, whether it's football, basketball, whatever, that scoring is more important and more exciting. But these guys shoot the ball well. I mean, the professional athletes of today are so much more athletic. You know, they I think they have better shooting percentages. Of course, they got a 3-point line that they tend to use a lot more. But you know, back in the day when we have this argument all the time, and I'm one of those guys that said an all-star team from today could beat an all-star team from 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Yeah, just because of the athleticism. I mean, you know, when Pete Maravich was playing, he was stellar and great, but Rich Kelly started as a center. You know, and so you look at some of the centers playing now.
Try Mel Counts on this Jazz game.
Yeah, I mean, nevertheless, and you know, it wasn't just, you know, hey, you're 7 feet tall, we're going to put you in there. I mean, no, these guys are shooting threes, and you put him against the Greek Freak, and it's an embarrassment. You know,
well,
now, look, they had the Bird and the Magic and the you know, Julius Erving, and you go down the list, but. You know, you'd have to take all-stars, I think, from certain generations. You know, Bill Laimbeer, you know, the guy was just a big bruiser. You know, you can't do that anymore. He'd fall out in the second quarter. So I just think it's a different game. You've got, you know, Russell Westbrook does amazing things every game. He's so unbelievably athletic, and I just can't see some of these guys staying with them. It's just the game is elevated. Same thing with football. You know, oh, yeah, that football team was great. The 49ers were great. Yeah, they had great players, but if they played, you know, the Patriots of these last few years or any of the teams, I mean, you know, their offensive linemen were 260 pounds, 250 pounds. You know, it's just a different game. They've grown since they're 5 years old, and now they're, you know, They're grown and bred and in the game and going to camps and doing all these things instead of smoking cigarettes on the sidelines. You know, it's just
I think the European players changed the NBA, because before the Europeans had an influence, it was unthinkable that a 7-footer would be shooting 3-pointers, like, you know, Dirk Nowitzki or that's unthinkable now. You do have 7-footers who, if you leave them open for 23 feet in the 3-point line, they're going to pop it. They're going to hit it. And so that's right. Changed the game also. But, the Pelicans just can't close it out. And the running joke in our house is, do you want to watch the Pelicans game? I said, let's just turn it on. It was about 8 minutes ago. They'll be tied. And let's watch the rest.
Yeah.
Because
– or turn it off by then, because that's when they
– Well, it's about closeout. And –
yeah.
I go back to close out. You look at the Phoenix Suns right now. We're a very young team, but they have Chris Paul. And when it comes out to close out team, like when the Suns beat the Pelicans 41-12 in the fourth quarter earlier this week, it's because he could penetrate, slice through, and dish off and get some easy looks and easy baskets. And the Pelicans do not have a player who can penetrate and kick and pop. No, we got two shooting guards.
We don't have a point guard.
Yeah, and even when we had Drew, he was not. He was more of a shooting guard than a point guard. He was a hybrid.
Correct.
That's probably the missing ingredient. Now they do have Kyra Lewis, but he's 19, 20 years old. And he's not filled out. I mean, he looks like a rookie. I'm sure he'll put on 25 pounds in the next 3 or 4 years. But he could give you about 10, 12 minutes spot play, but he's not going to be able a regular, and he's not going to help you get into the playoffs.
Well,
he's not going to help you in crunch time.
Position that, you know, then, you know, you say he's only 20, but, you know, Zion's only 20 as well, and he's lighting it up. He's an all-star.
He's a once in a
Mm-hmm. But it's a different game when you play his game versus the more heady game at the point guard. That's something that's just really hard to step into the NBA and do and start as a rookie, because there's so many facets to the game. The passing's different. Everything's different. And you're the guy that's got to lead it. And that just takes some time to learn, much like being a quarterback. you know. And I think if we could get somebody that had some very, you know, a great point guard that shares the ball, that knows, you know, knows where the ball needs to go, that would make all the difference.
If we had, not that we could afford him, and it's just a wish, but if we had a Chris Paul type of point guard, we would probably be about 7, 8, 9 games above 500 with this, with the rest of this team. It's just, I think that's the missing ingredient. LSU, I did watch LSU Arkansas, and LSU basketball is so frustrating because there are five individuals playing on the same team, not playing as a team. And it's very frustrating to watch a super talented team. They probably have more talent than anybody else, except Alabama, underachieve. It's always fun to watch a team that is not less talented overachieve. And it is terribly frustrating to watch a super talented team not
like
play
the
together. The 86 Ellis team overachieved. Now, throughout that tenure, you had the Shaq teams with Chris Jackson that underachieved in the NCAAs. But the problem is they're just not playing together. And you watch them, they come across midcourt, they're not moving the ball. They just play one-on-one, and if they could get a one-on-one shot and they make it, fine. If they don't, they're probably not going to get the rebound, and they're not sharing the ball. There's no easy baskets. There's no continuity to that team. It's just – terribly frustrating, and they had a nice three-game winning streak where they played themselves off the bubble.
Mm-hmm. Huh? That's a Will Wade issue. You know, Will's got a – he's got a problem to do it. And if you don't want to do that, we got a couple of guys on the bench that might want to. You know, and there's enough talent out there to make that adjustment.
But, well, 2 weeks ago they were on the bubble. When we talked last week, they were off the bubble. Now they're back on the bubble, and they're going to have – they play Vanderbilt, and I think they finish it up and they go to SEC tournament. They'll probably have to win two to get in. So,
are they doing any difference for the SEC tournament this year?
I don't think so. I think they're going to go ahead and play. The SEC, thank goodness for the SEC and college sports, because if the SEC didn't step up while all the other commissioners were in their bed sheets in the fetal position saying we're not going to play, we might not have any college sports this year. So kudos to the SEC. All right, let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. Albert, I think the callers didn't want to hear any more analysis about the Pelicans and LSU basketball. Phone line's full. let's go to Daryl. He's got a question regarding SBA. Hey, Daryl, you on all things legal. Hey.
Yes, Doug. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. this is my situation. Mm-hmm. 2006, I made three loans with SBA. Mm-hmm. The first loan was for to repair rental properties. Mm-hmm. And that was in my name, personal name. The second loan was in a business name, and that was for a piece of property I had just acquired right after Katrina. Mm-hmm. And then the third loan was a house I purchased. So I would have been – so, but they're all three different loans. Mm-hmm. So made payments for 15 years, 16 years, and I sold one of the rental properties that was collateralized. It was four. And I was $33,000 short. So I put the $33,000 and paid off that first loan. So that all those properties, in my understanding from the closing attorney, should have been released, the collateral should have been released when that sale was done. This happened in November of 2020. Mm-hmm. I've been back and forth on the phone with SBA. There some kind of way they transferred that collateral from the first loan to the second and the third loan. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they did it. And also, for them to release the house that I sold, they just sent me an email that I need a financial statement, a release form, and some form 770, and I'm arguing back and forth. This property, that loan is paid. I paid in full. But, you know, and I'm and the other two loans I'm up to date on. I'm not delinquent, you know.
Let me I got some pragmatic advice for you. Okay. We've been through this with Katrina, we've been through this with Isaac, we've been through this with a lot of the hurricanes and the recent flood. With people trying to get sell property with the SBA. There's two ways you can go about it. And set a lot of time aside. Get as high as you can in the food chain in SBA. Because what they do, the frontline workers just work off of a checkoff. And I'm going to say this respectfully. I don't want to say it the way I want to say it, but I'm doing it for radio. That they, instead of using ingenuity in their own thought process, the frontline workers are often encouraged to read off the checklists and not process things cognitively with common sense. Okay.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. So a lot of times, if you can get up to a supervisor or a supervisor's supervisor, you can get a lot of help. Here's the second thing we did, and we did this with the Baton Rouge flood, and you could do this here. We got Garrett Graves involved, his office. He was a congressman in Baton Rouge. And he called up, his office called up SBA in Dallas and, you know, knocked some heads. Now I'm saying this figuratively. And problem solved. So, you know, because, you know, you're at their mercy. I mean, it's not like you could bring in court and get an order for them to take this off. So what I would do is try to get up higher in the food chain. Document each conversation meticulously. Keep a log so that you can refer to it and try to get as high as you can to explain the situation and ask them to release the collateral. A lot of times when you get higher. Now, if that fails, what parish you live in?
I'm in Ascension Parish.
Do you have Garrett Graves? Yeah, you do.
No,
You do.
I contacted, what's his name? John Kennedy's office.
Yeah. Senator Kennedy's good about that, too. Both their offices is their staff. Now, what you have to do is you have to be persistent with them. In other words, whatever staff member's working on this for you, you know, get their name. Even if they'll give you their cell phone number, get their cell phone number. And follow up.
Yes. Just it's like, what I was trying to do is I have a property that I have a 7.5 interest rate, and with the VA I can get a 2.25, but I think it's getting caught up with this collateral. But those properties have been paid for, and let me just state the property under my business name. I owe 117, and it's valued at 260. So there's collateral there for that loan. And the personal house is 380, and I owe 147. So it's not like they don't have any collateral with these other properties, but some kind of way they keep shifting the original first loan's collateral to these other two loans. I don't even know how they're doing that without me signing. They just shifted everything over.
The other thing I would suggest is that you get email addresses for anyone that you speak to and email them follow-ups and say, and if you can, you know, scan and send copies of the mortgage documents that you have showing that this collateral was on this piece of property and it was not on the others. It needs to be released. What do I have to do to get it released? And then, you know, create a paper trail and a document trail, because, you know, push comes to shove one day, it's a he said, she said. But if you have an email that they are not responding to, or if you have an email that they are responding to, at least you've stated your case and you can document what's been told to you in that email.
Right. Well, let me just say this, too. Also, when this property was paid off in November, it was $133,000. I should have received a note from SBA saying it was paid, so I could have went to record a mortgage and got it released. I haven't received any documents. So I'm kind of, you know, holding the closing attorney responsible, because all those documents should have been sent with the monies. I had to give the closing attorney $33,000, and they gave the other $100,000 to pay the loan in full. Now, when you go to the computer, when you talk SBA, the loan is showing paid in full. But I haven't received anything from them, the note release that right. usually go to Ricardo Morgan's. I haven't received any documents at all. But they're saying that the San Antonio office is the one that's a problem, or El Paso, or wherever it is in yeah. Texas, is the one they're working from home and so forth. And
yeah, that's another problem. That's another problem yeah. with the, like, people who are trying to, you know, get tax refunds from the IRS, and they get the recorded statement saying, we'll be back later when COVID ends, right. basically.
As soon as our windmills click up again.
Yes, well, I really thought about maybe hiring an attorney because I have a small air conditioner refrigeration business. I'm trying to take care of that, and then every day I'm trying to.
Well, here's the bad part.
Go through the bureaucracy.
It's going to be, well, you're better off doing it yourself, because if you employ an attorney to do that, it's going to be very expensive, because it's not an issue of expertise. It is more of an issue of endurance. And taking, you know, sitting, keeping them on hold for a couple of hours, and you know, they're going to put you on hold, they're going to cut you off, and then you got to call back, they put you on hold, get it out.
Yes.
You know, so it's more of a time issue than it is an expertise issue and endurance. Now, again, I would encourage, Senator Kennedy is wonderful about addressing these type of complaints. In fact, I know personally it is discouraging to him, and I don't want to say enraged, but he's very passionate about, you know, government agencies working and serving, especially for the, you know, for the citizens who are doing the right thing, paying their loans off, doing things on time. And so he's very good. And Garrett Graves, Congressman Graves, he did a fantastic job for the Baton Rouge flood, because they had a lot of SBA issues with banks. You know, with the flood, and his staff worked very, very hard. So I would do both of them. I don't know about Senator Cassidy. I mean, U.S. Senator Cassidy. I it wouldn't hurt to try, but I would hit those. But you do need a paper trail in order to help them. Fight your issue. So
Senator Graves.
Yeah, Garrett Graves. G-R-A-V-E-S. I mean, U.S. Congressman Garrett Graves does a wonderful job. Wonderful job.
Garrett Graves, I'll find his number and I'll reach out to him.
His staff and they did a lot. They did a lot of work in the Baton Rouge flood that was really great. Helped homeowners get their money in. All right, let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief time. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Thomas. Got a question regarding a mortgage. Hey, Thomas, you're in all things legal.
Thomas,
my man.
Hello?
Hey, Thomas.
Hey, good morning.
All right.
I need to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
We got two loans. One was a large one. We paid that off. And the other one is a small SBA loan. But when we called the company that we paid the large loan off, they don't want to give us any kind of acknowledgement, you know, like we say, when you're going to send us something telling us that it's paid off, and they won't do it.
They should. I mean, there's no reason not to. Have they sent you a statement that it's been paid off? Like you have a zero balance on your statement?
Every time we call, they're de-evasive. They don't act like they wanted. They said that when you first made the loan, we gave you something then so you can use that. But that was 30 years ago.
They should send you a canceled note. That's part of the deal. That canceled note needs to be recorded in the mortgage records and to show the public, you know, when they go search for the title of the company, I mean, the title of the property, they'll see that note has been paid in full and the mortgage has been canceled. What parish are you in?
Orleans,
yeah. And how long ago did you pay it off?
Well, not too long ago, about a month.
Oh, just a month. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how big the mortgage company is, that may take them a little while to get the paperwork processed and then get that sent over to you. But you should get a you know, you should get a response from someone. I would just, like Doug said, for the last call, just keep trying to call and call and call and make sure that you go up the food chain and try to get someone who is going to respond and at least understand what your problem is. And, you know, are you getting to speak to anyone at all, or are you simply doing this over the internet?
We speak to someone, but they'll say they just don't act like they're really concerned about it. But
I would say this then: ask to speak to their supervisor.
Okay.
Say I'm not going to judge. Yes, sir.
One more question: if they don't respond, could an attorney, like say, for instance, you do something to get them?
Well, that's difficult because they normally only want to speak to the homeowner. They, you know, from a practical standpoint, they don't want to talk to third parties. So from a pragmatic standpoint, plus you don't want to pay them to do something you can do yourself.
Yeah, and then, you know, you might write a letter for somebody and, you know, engage someone just for that letter. Hey, look, I don't want you to go file suit or anything, but, you know, perhaps if they get a letter from an attorney, they may pay a little more attention to it. I don't know that to be the case because, you know, especially these big mortgage companies, they know that they can lose you in the system pretty easily. So, but, you know, that would be up to you as to what you wanted to pay and what you wanted to do. I would give it a little bit more time. Is there something in particular you're trying to do with the property that's requiring you to make sure that this note is canceled and recorded?
Well, this house is pretty large, and it's just my wife and I, and we elderly people, and we don't want to live in a big old house. We want to sell this house and get something small, you know, real small.
Yeah. Well,
right.
Well, I think you're just going to have to spend some time on the phone and, you know, just, you know, social security number, give him date of birth, all the information, loan number. And if you do not get satisfaction, it's just like when we said this in Katrina. You know, you're going to have to make some people help you. You know, you're going to have to tell them, this is what I want, and I'm not getting off the phone until I get it.
Okay.
And, you know, just got to be aggressive. When you're dealing with big bureaucracies such as banks and government, you just have to get a little, I won't say forceful, but you have to be very definitive as to what you want, and that you're not going to be satisfied until you get it.
Okay.
So, you know, there you go. All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Mike's got a question regarding signage. Hey, Mike, you're on All Things Legal.
Oh, yes. Good morning. I was just calling to get a quick question. I own a painting and flooring company, and I wanted to know what are the ramifications of putting a sign on your truck as it relates to wrecks or something of that nature. Like if I call the wreck and I'm in a wrong, how does that work as it relates to that sign being on my truck?
That's an interesting question. You know, you got lawyers out there that are saying, hey, if there's a sign on the truck, you know, call us. And you know, it may be more of an incentive to call if someone has an accident and they may or may not be injured. That's a personal decision that you'll have to make. How much risk can you stand, right? Versus how much business you want to obtain from having your name out there. I mean, quite frequently, I've seen a truck and made a phone call and said, you know, that reminds me, I need to have a video inspection of this. Let me call this a video inspection company if I didn't have a reference from someone else. So, you know, I think it's good for business. You know, I wouldn't worry too much about the car accident issue and go out there and advertise your business and try to make as much money as you can and know that you have insurance for your auto accident that, you know, if somebody decides they want to come after you, they, you know, insurance company will defend you and cover your damages.
Oh, so you're saying that the sign won't hold a whole lot of bearings or weight or what have you.
I'm saying that some people, you know, that are out there trying to make a buck and not that are not really injured are going to take advantage of that situation. But, you know, in my experience, it's fewer and farther between. And, you know, I go out there and advertise your business and make a living is my recommendation.
Yeah. Because
if that's something you're really concerned about, you know, and your business is good anyway, and you've got all the business you can stand, then there's no reason to have a sign on your truck. So, yeah. But I mean, it's free advertising, you know, that you can ride around with and advertise your business.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, do the risks outweigh the benefits? I don't think so. I think it's more beneficial to have a sign on your truck and, you know, go get as much business as you can get.
I see. Okay, thank you, guys.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to Justin. Albert,
quickly,
you want to follow?
That dovetails into my rant and tirade over the whole uninsured motorist coverage that people should always have. Those lawyers advertise if there's a name on the vehicle, you know, call us. And they're saying that because they know that if it is a company, and a company-owned vehicle, the chances are very, very good that they'll have not only insurance but a high-dollar insurance amount. And so that's what the lawyers that do this personal injury want. They want to make sure that, you know, there's a high-dollar coverage. Because they know they've been in a situation too many times where – somebody maybe has had a serious accident or injury, and the other driver has no coverage. And then they talk to their own client to say, hey, do you have uninsured motorist coverage on your policy where we can maybe collect against your policy? And if quite often these agents will talk people out of getting uninsured motorist coverage because they want their quote to come in lower than somebody else's quote. And so it's something you should always have for the value. It's worth the extra couple of $100 a year to have that uninsured motorist or underinsured motorist coverage in that event. You know, especially in Orleans Parish, there are so many folks riding around with no automobile insurance coverage that it's just it makes total sense to have UM coverage. And if you file a claim under your own UM coverage, your insurance rates cannot go up by law. They cannot go up because it's not based on your liability. It's based on the liability of the uninsured or underinsured motorist. So anyway, just my little rant on that. But that's the word, you know, that follows why these lawyers are out there advertising for, hey, if it's got a name on the truck, call us. And we'll represent you because they want to make sure that there's coverage enough for your injuries and accidents.
All right. There you go. That'll save you a lot of money if you're in that situation if you do that. Let's go to a break, Doug Cinceri. Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers. Got about 5 minutes before the break. Let's go to Justin. Hey, Justin, you're in All Things Legal. Justin.
Doug and Albert, can you hear me?
Hear you good.
Hey, you're awesome. Let me tell you something. I had to come over to excuse just to call you and say hello. And, Doug, you knew my dad. And when you met him, you knew what I was going through all my life. I mean, I miss my dad. I really do. Anyway, I have a law question.
Yes.
A friend of mine has a gas station convenience store. He owns it. And I patronize him all the time. I've been patronizing him for like 10 years now. He's tired of the panhandlers outside bothering the customers. And he asked me, he said, there's nothing I can do. I said, yes, you can. This is a private business, private property. You told me to get off the property. If you come back, they're trespassing. Is that true? That's what I think it is.
Well, I think if he's a nuisance, what parish is he in?
Orleans Parish, but.
I think if Well, there's the theoretical and then there's the pragmatic. Theoretically,
okay. What's pragmatic?
Most police officers will remove someone who's panhandling on a private business, not pursuant to a law, but just, you know, pursuant to trying to do the right thing. And unfortunately, in Orleans Parish, things seem to work differently. I'm trying to be diplomatic.
Diplomatic. Well, look, Doug, I've been penniless. I've been homeless before, but I never went to and begged for something from somebody. And I know these people are hurting, but they should not like come after me like this. I mean, I have rights. I mean, I have rights to just go into the store and do what I want to do.
You do have a right to go into the store, but you don't have the right to disrupt their business. And, you know, it's a private business. You can ask someone to be removed. And if they're not removed, you can call the police for, to ask them to be removed. And, you know, if there's a nuisance, it's more one of those pragmatic problems as far as, you know, you're not going to get arrested usually for panhandling in a store unless you're asked to leave and they refuse, and then they'll arrest you for some other thing,
yes, sir.
You know, for resisting arrest or, you know, something like that. It's you know, it's one of the things that police try to do. And you bring up a good point with this police officer that, you know, died this weekend.
I heard about that.
He was in a situation where, and this is where police officers do not get credit. Nobody gives him a parade. Nobody gives them a condemnation when they have millions and millions of encounters that they defuse without getting any type of awards, any type of condemnations, any pats in the back or anything. Or there's no parades for them, for sure, or marches for them. And that, you know, when you have these benign situations, like if you call a police officer to say, hey, can you remove this guy who's panhandling in my store.
He's interrupted my business. That's right.
Yeah, it's just and they come over, and all of a sudden that police officer is dead. That's always a risk in every encounter you have in that situation. That's a real, real risk. And so, you know.
Doug, let me finish this up. The policemen who do police work, that's a calling. They know what they're getting themselves into.
Amen.
They know that.
Just like the military and everybody else who, you know, allows us, you know, who protects us so that we can have the right to complain about things, you know? And so.
Well, I love your show. And I love talking to you and Albert. So y'all have a great, great Sunday, okay?
Thanks so much, Justin. I wanted to use that as a segue, Albert. I think police officers, you know, that you don't, you know, we do a lot of family law. We see so many situations that they diffuse with a lot of wisdom, compassion, thoughtfulness, situations that could have been involved, you know, death, violence, and a lot of other things that they never get credit for. They don't get a raise for it. They don't get a condemnation for it. They don't get a pat in the back from the mayor or anybody else, the city council or anybody else. And, you know, that is dangerous, dangerous work. And you can go in on a benign encounter like the young man who went in at Carver to break up a situation and end up dead because you're a police officer. So, you know, before, you know, that part of being a police officer doesn't seem to be heard.
Yeah, but the pay is good.
Huh? Yes?
But the pay is really good.
Yeah, well, that's another part. So there you go. Right. So, you know, we just, you know, there it is what it is. All right, we got to go to a break. We'll be back in 10 minutes. National news, local news, see you in 10. Stay tuned for All Things Legal. Hey, we're back for hour number two. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. Albert, how we sound? Are we?
Test 1, 2, 3. How are
we? We're good. Huh? We good? Nope. Albert, we got to get back on the phone. I'm sorry. All right, I'll get you off. All right. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Ed. Bob. He's got a question regarding successions. Hey, Bob, you on All Things Legal.
Hello, good morning. Hey. Okay. My mom passed late in 19. Very small estate, a few dollars in the bank, a few life insurance policies that barely covered the funeral. I found an account in Texas with a relatively small balance. And on a recent trip visiting the grandchildren, I go to the bank with copies of birth certificates, death certificates, and last will and testament. Despite all the documentation I had, the bank would not release the funds, indicating they need a copy of the estate settlement. There was no estate file. She died in Louisiana. There was no estate file. It was not even worth the expense. I subsequently found a form affidavit of small succession from the state of Louisiana, mm-hmm. and then have a five-page template of the actual affidavit. Mm-hmm. Question is, where do I send this? I have called every department possibly in Baton Rouge, and no one can answer the question.
Well, you don't send it anywhere. You do the affidavit of small succession, and you bring it to the bank.
Okay.
So you basically bring it to the bank. Now, the question would be whether a Texas bank would recognize it or not.
Right.
That's the
issue. It would cost more to follow the account.
Okay, let me ask you this. How much is
It's only about $1,800.
Who's got signatory authority on the account?
No living person has signatory.
All right.
They said, sorry, you were not named as a beneficiary on the account.
Well,
you cannot even do that in Louisiana, but in Texas you can.
Here's what I would do. I'd call up the bank and ask if they would recognize this. Talk to the bank, somebody higher up in the bank chain at that branch, and say, look, in Louisiana there's a procedure called the affidavit of small succession. Will you check with your legal counsel?
If you want to, you can cite the statute. It's if you got a pen?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Louisiana Code of Civil Procedure, Article 3432. And that sets forth the process for an affidavit of small succession. It will at least give them something to give to legal so they can make a quicker decision for you. You won't have to go research it. And it just shows that, yes, these are who are placed in possession. Now back then it was probably a different amount, but now it's $125,000 worth of a succession. Anything less than that, you can do it by affidavit of small succession. And there are a few exceptions, but that's what I would do. I would cite that statute to them and say, hey, look, we have the right to file this. This is a valid thing. You don't need a judgment of possession for such small amounts. And then actually 3431 says the judicial opening of a succession is unnecessary as a result.
Oh, great. Okay, guys, thanks. Was not aware that it actually did not have to be filed. Appreciate the guidance.
Yeah, and I would just give a heads up to the bank officer, to sort of let them do their due diligence on their own end. So that when this happens, you'll be in a place where you can get it done. All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to Ed. He's got a question regarding auto insurance. Hey Ed, you're in All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico. Ed.
Yeah, is this Edwin you're looking for? Because I'm Edwin, not Ed.
All right, Edwin, we're close. I had the first two letters right. The last three I've got wrong.
Yes, sir. No problem. I just didn't want to get mixed up. But anyway, good taking my call, and I love y'all's show. Y'all do an excellent job of educating the public on all things legal.
What about LSU? Did we do a good job educating on LSU football?
Well, God, look, I'm not a football fanatic, but from what I can hear y'all.
I'm messing with you. What you got for us, Adam?
Well, look, I have a comment and a question, but relating to that comment that the other gentleman had earlier about the sign on the vehicle for his business, I was in a similar situation. When I first started my business years ago, which is a handyman service business, I used to advertise, and that was my way of trying to get recognized and known by the public. It did good. You know, it helped me in many ways. But somebody talked to me and told me that probably would not be a good idea because for any longer because of how people do out here when they're driving on the road. You know, people just, they're impatient by nature. And if you don't be careful, somebody would actually run into you and then try to, you know, make it look like it's your fault. And if they see the sign on the vehicle, well, that automatically they see dollar sign. So, yeah. You know, I just took that off my vehicle, and I feel like this. My business is known enough now that it doesn't need that in order for the to do well. But I want to also ask a question relating to that. Now, similar to that, I was recently doing a job in a neighborhood when for a person when their neighbor accidentally backed from out of their yard, out of their driveway, across a two-lane road. Okay, that divided their house from the person I was doing work at, and a person hit my vehicle that was parked well out of the road on the side. And what made me angry about it is the person tried to run. In other words, they tried to bail out. They didn't want to own up to the mistake. But I caught the person, and the person said, well, we don't have to get the police involved. I said, no, we are going to get the police involved. Police came out, make a long story short. Police came out, wrote him up and everything, and told him it was his fault. Now, let's fast forward to now. I've repeatedly called the insurance company that person is insured on. They have basically ignored me. All I wanted them to do was just fix my vehicle, repair it. I wasn't interested in trying to sue them or anything like that. But now I've gotten to the point that I'm looking to sue them for everything I can get because they have ignored me. And meanwhile, my vehicle is disfigured. It's operable, but it's disfigured. I mean, what would you do in that situation? So now this happened in August of 2020, and I'm still dealing with this right now in this new year.
Well, okay. Do you have insurance? You have collision insurance?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I mean, your collision insurance would pick it up, but for the, you know, your deductible. Now, what you would also have, Albert.
Yeah, so you could write you could file a claim with that insurance company, and then if they don't pay in a property damage loss for a vehicle, they have a shorter period of time to pay your damages than for any other type of case. So a third party vehicle property damage claim, they have to adjust that claim within 14 days and come out and write you a check, especially if the liability is clear. So in that situation, if you have a lawyer write a letter for you citing that statute, citing the penalties and attorney's fees that they are now subject to, then I think you would be in a good position to hit them up for penalties and attorney's fees for failing to fix your truck. Now, if there were no injuries, obviously you're not in the vehicle, then you would not have had any injuries. But you are entitled to penalties and attorney's fees for their failure to provide you with a payment, or at least come out and give you an estimate. If you want to call the office, I can refer you to an auto shop that can give you an estimate. They deal with insurance companies all the time, and they may be able to send that to the other driver's insurance company. And because you know sometimes things just go away. You know, here it is. This happened in August, and we're now in almost in March. And, you know, you've still not gotten any relief. So after a year, you know, your claim's done. So you need to make sure you get on this before the anniversary date in August and actually file a lawsuit. So the first thing that you need to do is find out how much your damages are. So you probably need to go get an estimate, if you don't have one already, for the damages. And then, you know, from there, submit that estimate to the insurance company with a demand, you know, citing the statutes, demanding that if they don't pay within a certain period of time, they'll be hit up with penalties and insurance.
And look, let me just say this before I end it, that whatever they asked me for, I submitted. Now, they asked me for pictures because I told them initially, listen, guys, all I want is you all to fix my vehicle. Okay, I was not in the vehicle. So I know I'm not liable for injury. That wasn't my aim. Just repair my vehicle. Now, they asked for pictures. I submitted pictures twice.
Did you get a copy of the report when the police came out? Did you get a copy of it?
Yes, sir. I have all of that. In fact, I have a lawyer that works for me that, right now. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did you forward the police report to them as well?
They created a claim. The insurance company created a claim. They took all the information, all of that. They have all of the information. I know they do because they asked me for that. I submitted all of that. Right. I even went to a location, insurance location, one of their locations, and the people took all of that.
Okay. Well, it might be time to file suit because if you don't, you'll lose your cause of action after a year. You have 1 year to sue somebody for a negligence action, and the insurance company is part of the other driver's claim. So you would have to file a claim against that other driver and his insurance company and allege penalties and attorney's fees against the insurance company for the property damages.
Yes, sir. Well, look, thank you so much for the information, and that I will do. I will take your advice. And I tell you, it's just sad that it has to go that route, but that's the way it is. Yeah. So thank you,
all
guys.
Right.
You'll keep doing a great job.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to a break.
487-1304 at the office, and we'll go ahead and we'll get that taken care of for you.
837-1304. Let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, all things legal. We got the boards clear. Albert, we had a couple of issues. If you want to talk a little bit, I guess we were asked a couple of auto accident issues. Now, the issue regarding property damage, if you could, what's the difference between a claim for property damage and against a third party versus personal injuries?
Well, yeah. So the third party issue is important to know what that means. So if you, for instance, the caller that just called, if he has collision insurance under his own policy, then that he files a claim with his own insurance company, and then that is considered a first-party claim because it's a claim against his own insurance company. The second claim would be a third-party claim, meaning someone else ran into the back of you. They're clearly at fault, and you're filing a claim against the adverse driver's insurance company. That is a third-party claim. So the legislature has different rules for the different types of policies. They're more strict when it comes to your own policy and property damage claims, et cetera. So for a vehicle, there's separate statutes for vehicles. For this very situation where, we're not fighting about, personal injury and pain and suffering and things that aren't so defined. When you're just fighting about property damage for a vehicle, it's important that people have their vehicle so they can get to work, they can bring their kids to school, all that sort of thing. So there's a shorter window to file a claim. I'm sorry, a shorter window for the insurance company to pay a claim, and there are penalties involved with that. And same thing with a rental. They've got to put you in a reasonable rental if your car is disabled. And so there are other considerations when it comes to auto property damage. A third party claim. Here's another thing a lot of people don't know, right? They'll show up at my office handling a personal injury claim, and they show up at my office, and I always ask them to bring their proof of coverage for a number of reasons. But one of the things that on their declarations page that a lot of people aren't aware of is something called med pay or medical payments. And what that does is it basically like a health insurance policy for you or anyone in your vehicle to cover your injuries or their injuries as a result of an accident, regardless of fault, And it's typically, you know, sometimes they're $1,000, sometimes they're $5,000, sometimes they're $10,000. But that is coverage you have just to, you know, go to the emergency room and whatever. And so if for some reason, you know, you have a high deductible under your health insurance, you can go to your MedPay and there is no deductible. They pay from the first dollar. The other thing you want to make sure when you get a copy of the declarations page is to make sure that they have coverage, because there is the no pay, no play law. And so if you have an automobile accident and you don't have any liability coverage, then the first $15,000 of any damages that you would be entitled to, you waive, because you did not pay into the system. So therefore, you're not entitled to that first $15,000, which is the minimum coverage. So when you're handling a case for an injured person or person that has an automobile accident and coverage damages, you want to confirm that they do have their own coverage and send that to the adjuster to make sure that they know that the no pay, no play does not apply to them.
Okay. And you want to talk, we got Kevin online, but you got anything you want to tie it up with?
Well, no, that's all. Penalties for primarily more for your own insurer if they don't pay timely. They have a duty to settle claims fairly and adjust claims fairly and pay timely. And if they don't, typically it's within 30 days. And if they don't, then they can pay your attorney's fees and penalties as a result.
All right. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, you know all things legal with Ducks and Terry and Albert Nico.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, what you got for us, brother?
Hey, look, so I'm calling because my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, purchased a house that she thought was in good shape, obviously, because she bought it. Within the coming months after purchasing the house, we found that it had rotten piers. The house is like 4 feet off the ground. About half the piers are rotten, and it had the air condition had to be replaced within a week. Quite a few electrical issues and many other serious issues. She did not examine the paperwork as good as she probably should have, and she relied on her neighbor, who was a real estate agent. And upon examining the paperwork afterwards, I noticed that everything on the disclosure form was N-A, 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 N-A. The owner did not disclose anything on it. This led us to go seek an attorney who, that was in August of 2019. In May of 2020, we signed paperwork with an attorney to go ahead and file suit, not only against the inspector who did not find any of these issues. Matter of fact, he said that the piers were in good shape and the air conditioning was in good shape, but both our real estate attorney and the real estate attorney of the seller and the seller himself. Several months ago, they had the first deposition. Let me back up a little bit. Well, upon meeting with the attorney, we let them know, hey, look, there's got to have a cost line to where this is not a reasonable lawsuit. We're not trying to get a lot of money. We're just trying to pay for the damages. The piers were about $20,000-$25,000 total to be fixed. Air conditioning was about $6,000-$7,000, electrical issues another $1,000 or so. So you're probably talking about $35,000 tops. We say, look, if this gets out of hand, we don't want to move it forward anymore because this will obviously not be worth it.
What's your question? Yeah, I guess what's your question?
Okay, so my question is that she has her first deposition several months ago, and the hearing judge throws it out because she says that the year from the time it was inspected was the suit was not filed by the year the time was inspected.
Okay,
and she said actually, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
She said actually I want to hear this because this sounds like a very interesting case. So she throws out the part. And that's for the home inspector. She throws that out. So first of all, the attorney who had at least 6 weeks to know that did not find that. Second of all, we start receiving the bills, and the bills are into the $5,000 range. And then, we, you know, upon speaking to my now wife, she was telling me that, you know, the guy we spoke to originally, the partner attorney, was not even handling anything. The guy we made an agreement with, it was, I guess, someone out of law school or whatnot, probably a young attorney.
Oh.
And okay. Evidently, this is like the bill is getting
okay.
out of hand.
What is your question? I mean, what do you want to, I guess, ask us about the situation?
Okay, so my question is first of all, is there any, since the bill was not filed on time, is there any ramifications against the attorney to not pay that bill as far as him preparing for all this deposition and everything?
No. Okay. Albert, you want to address that? He's basically, well, say, since we lost, I don't want to pay the bill.
No, I think if you have a malpractice claim against the attorney for failing to file timely, and it was something that you knew or should have known. Now, what tells me that the suit may not have been filed timely was because the home inspector may have pointed out issues that you are having problems with. And if you pointed out those issues and said, hey, you need to contact a licensed electrician because we have issues with A, B, C, and D. And had you contacted the licensed electrician, the theory is you would have discovered these other issues, and you failed to do that within a year, and therefore you don't have a cause of action for that. So that's my guess as to what happened with the why the case got dismissed for prescription. If not, you know, again, somebody would have to look at your home inspection report. They'd have to look at all the information, look at the court pleadings, and see what's going on. And again, if they had that information prior to the 1 year deadline and did not file suit within a year, that's an issue, and that's something you may need to speak with a malpractice, an attorney, and discuss that with that attorney, and he or she will be able to guide you with respect to whether or not you have a claim against them.
Now, it sounds like you got a problem with the case because you said she didn't read the paperwork, and it was probably sold as is, where is, and the property disclosure said not applicable. So it seems like your primary claim may not be against the homeowner, but maybe with the inspector, maybe not. It sounds like maybe you found out a year after the the inspection also. So there's probably a lot more issues that you have to look at.
Well, the funny part is upon doing some research, one of the real estate companies, Latter & Blum, is showing them another disclosure form, which was not showed to my wife. They have their own copy, which was not signed by the buyer, and her real estate agent had her sign the one that was not applicable all the way down, which was signed also by the owner. So now the two real estate companies have, and I figured that was the best. The home inspection place was not the best route or the owner, but it was the real estate company. But, we feel like we're in a rock between a rock and a hard place because this attorney keeps throwing these fees, and it's up into the, you know, $6,000 range. And at some point, it's an open and shut case.
You discovered or should have discovered the real estate agent's negligence within a year. You have to file suit within a year of discovering that. And so,
yes, again, we have.
Without seeing
the
paperwork,
included.
Without seeing the exception that was filed by the defendants to dismiss the case, it's really hard for us to advise you. But that's something that you're going to have to bring to an attorney and say, hey, look, I think I have a malpractice case, and let that attorney take a look at it and advise you as to whether or not you do. Doug and I don't do attorney malpractice work, but there are attorneys out there that do, and that's probably where you need to go to take a look at it.
All right. Thanks for the call. You can call us at 837-1304. We can give you some numbers of some legal malpractice attorneys you could call. We got to go to break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief time out. Hey, we're back. We're Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We had an issue regarding real estate. And, you know, Jefferson Parish, a lot of real estate transactions have been occurring, especially in Jefferson Parish and also certain parts of Orleans Parish and always St. Tammany's Parish. But I had a situation that I want to talk about today with Albert, is that we had a situation where you had a buyer and seller, and they had the real estate agents involved. And a lot of times there's two aspects of being a lawyer. One is to advise someone on how to prevail in a case. But probably a more important function of a lawyer is to not get in litigation to begin with and to stay out of that arena. And one of the things that happened is you had a seller who was selling to a buyer, and they had some issues in the house with windows and roof. And with the real estate, and this is a function, even though the real estate agents aren't liable legally, it might not have been some good judgment, because what happened was the real estate agents agreed that the seller may make certain repairs to the windows and roof. And after the act of sale, they had a disagreement as to the extent of the repairs that should have been done. And one of the things that, you know, where a solution to that would be, if you're a seller and you don't, and there's an issue regarding maybe roof, windows, or some type of maintenance issue or repair issue, you shouldn't require the seller to do the repairs, because there's a high degree of potential for a dispute over whether the repairs were done properly, what was the scope of the repairs, you know, whether some intervening event came in later that caused a problem that has nothing to do with the repairs. It's probably better just to do a reduction in price and tell the buyer to deal with the repairs. Albert?
I agree with that completely. The other issue, I had a situation very recently where the buyer went in and there were some things that needed to be completed. This was a house that was being renovated and flipped. And always be aware of those. I'm coming across those very frequently, because quite often they're not done by licensed contractors. You know, people put lipstick on a house and just flip it and sell it to try to make as much profit as they can. So the paint on the walls looks good and the flooring looks good, but you don't know what's going on underneath. And even a home inspector is not going to be able to find all those things because they're hidden behind the walls. So, but be careful with that. In this situation, there were some things that needed to be completed. And, you know, during the inspection, the homeowner found those things out and then came back to the seller and said, hey, look, we need X, Y, and Z done before the closing. And so he figured, you know, they're in the construction business, let them finish the renovation, right? So they do a final walkthrough the day before the closing, and half of the items on the punch list are not done. And so the agents kind of talk him into, hey, look, let's just go to closing, and we'll put some money aside in escrow to get this work done. And so he did that, and the seller was supposed to do the work within 14 days, and they didn't do the work. Unfortunately, the amount of money in escrow didn't cover the amount of repairs. And so, you know, and they went to closing anyway. So, you know, the suggestion is, no, we're not going to close. We're going to extend this until you have performed your obligations under the contract. And if you don't, then I'm going to walk away from the deal. And if I walk away from the deal and you don't perform your obligations, then you're going to be responsible for breaching the purchase agreement. So, like Doug said, the better option is to put as much as you can into escrow or have that reduction in purchase price. Say, look, we see all these, we got an estimate for all these deficiencies. We're going to go ahead and reduce the purchase price by X. The problem with that, Doug, is that, you know, this is one of the biggest purchases you're going to make in your life, usually. Okay, you know, young family, they're trying to buy their first home. They've got $15,000 in deficiencies. So they reduce the purchase price. Well, all of a sudden, the loan is for the reduced purchase price.
Right.
Now they've got to come up with this extra $15,000 when they've spent a bunch of money probably on inspections and et cetera, and then also on the down payment. So they don't necessarily have that $15,000 to go get these repairs done. So, you know, you might have to, you know, an escrow fund would be good if they would do that. If you know, and then again, that sets you up for dispute. Yeah, well, I did that. Well, you didn't do it like you were supposed to do it. So it's complicated, but if you have the money to fix the repairs and you can reduce the purchase price,
that's a better alternative as far as staying out of trouble, because
staying out of trouble. Right. But then, you know, the reality is, do you have the money to now go ahead and fix those items depending on the value of that? Right.
Right. Because, you know, again, you know, I think it's when it comes to commercial property and residential property, when you have potential litigation, it's really two different arenas, because you're dealing with the personal preference. You know, when you're doing commercial property, a lot of times you're putting up walls and partitions, and it's not as decorative, and it doesn't have the details that a home does, especially if you got, you know, a homeowner who's, you know, has a vision for it. And so it's just a it's sort of a different ball game. But I think what happens is when you have the pressures of extending loans, you know, rates are going to, you know, your rates only locked in for a certain period of time. And after that, the rate may go up or what have you. There's a lot of pressures to that. But so which does make it difficult. But if you do something with the repairs, saying you do these repairs, you're just going to have to be very specific as to the scope and not be general about it, because that's how, I guess, disputes occur.
Yeah, and if you're looking at small amounts of damage, not damage, small amounts of repairs that need to be made, let's say you need a new air conditioner compressor and it's $5,000, then one option is, and really the best option, especially if you don't necessarily have the $5,000 on the back end to go in and fix it, is to, instead of reducing the purchase price, have the seller pay $5,000 worth of your closing costs. So that way you still get the loan for the full amount.
Right.
And you can then, but you don't have to now come up with that $5,000 in cash to pay that. And you can now take that five and buy your new compressor with it.
Yeah. There you
go. There's kind of creative ways to do that, but that's a good way to do it. Now, of course, your loan's going to be $5,000 higher, and, you know, but it's, you know, $30 a month, you know, so for the term of the loan. And then the, you know, you paid the full purchase price, but you've got a brand new air conditioning.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to a break. Doug Santeri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. If you want to call us at a law firm at 837-1304, 837-1304, North Shore, 985-624-9697. We'll be right back after this brief last time out. We're back. We've got about 5 minutes. So Saints news this week. Russell Wilson is on the market. He named the Saints. He's got a no trade clause as the Saints as a possible destination. Do you think this is realistic or just pie in the sky, Albert?
Well, I think it's all realistic. It's follow the money. It's all about the money, right? So the issue I have with it is I think the Saints would have to decimate their defense, which is an excellent defense, to get Russell Wilson. So, you know, is the trade-off worth it, you know, just from a salary cap standpoint? Or do you just ride, you know, put your money on Jameis Winston? Maybe you pull some things out of the offensive scheme, you know, that Drew Brees has been doing for many, many years that, you know, he's so familiar with, and you know, let somebody who's only been there a year or two kind of start off a little more slowly, and work their way up to, you know, knowing what Drew Brees knows and how to react and how that system works. Because, I mean, listen, in terms of Jameis Winston, you know, 11 times in NFL history, a quarterback has thrown for 5,000 yards. He's done it twice. So clearly, you know, he's got the ability to move the ball down the field, to do those things. You know, yeah, he's thrown some interceptions and made some bad reads. But, you know, you look at a guy like Brett Favre, you know, he had one of the highest touchdown interception ratios, you know, that were almost the same because he he was a gunslinger. He took his chances and let his receivers go make plays for him. Now, granted, I think the receiving core for Tampa Bay has been better than the Saints. You know, Michael, with the exception of Michael Thomas, but although Michael Thomas, you know, how many times can you do a 7-yard slant and get 7 yards? I mean, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't make you the greatest receiver in the NFL.
Well, you know, like Randall Cunningham and Brett Favre had their greatest developments from year 6, 7, 8, 9.
Correct.
And so correct. You have that. I think the biggest problem for the Saints is they don't have the assets draft-wise because they're skinny in the draft as it is. They have very little draft assets going into the draft, much less they're back, and plus they pick at 28th, and if they get Russell Williams, Wilson, they'll probably pick around 28th the following year if they give away 2 first-round picks, plus in salary cap hell. And they would have to probably – the Seattle would not want Michael Thomas. And if we traded Michael Thomas, that would put us further into salary cap hell because his signing bonus would become immediately due and payable as far as the salary cap's concerned. They got DJ Metcalf, and they got good receivers. So I would say you'd have to part with Alvin Kamara and possibly Marshawn Lattimore or Ryan Ramczyk. And so the question is you would gut your team to get Russell Wilson, so you'd have a quarterback, but your team would be gutted and the future of your team. So while it sounds nice – and it's very alluring, and I think it would be the perfect fit for Russell Wilson because Drew Brees and they have a similar – I guess they're similar type quarterbacks, except Russell Wilson has a lot more mobility. I just don't think they have the assets to do it, salary cap hell, and I don't think they're going to decimate their team to do it. So I think they're
I agree with that completely. And I don't think – we get a little feedback. I don't think it's worth it to pick him up. I think you go – you go with Jameis Winston, let him prove himself. You know, one of the things that the Saints have done over the last 3 or 4 years is say, okay, this is our year. This is our year. We're gonna mortgage the team to try to go get us another Super Bowl. And we've come dangerously close 3 or 4 times, but you know, we just didn't get there. And so now all of a sudden we're stuck with these high-priced players that you've overpaid to stay. Michael Thomas being one, I was never a fan of that.
Yeah,
of paying a wide receiver that kind of money.
You were prophetic because you were one of the few people who said in any media that it was a bad idea to throw this kind of money at Michael Thomas, and it was a bad idea on two fronts. One is the fact that he was overpaid based on his position and his production. Number two, he hasn't handled the contract well from a personal standpoint and as a teammate standpoint. It seemed to have not made him a better teammate. But there you go. Saints news for this week. All right. That's a wrap on all things legal. We'll be back next week. Thank you, Albert. And we'll be back next week.
We'll hopefully have our technical issues worked out by next week on the video.
There you go.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!